previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
This is The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, Episode 5, Law & Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders, Season 1, Episode 6. Gets me every time. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment. We're talking about Law & Order True Crime, the longest title ever. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, your co-host, and I am here as always with Tara Ariano. Hello, Tara.
True.
No objection. Let's begin with the opening statement. That, of course, is the summary per TV guide of the episode. The jury hears from Lyle and Eric for the first time when the brothers testify in court, recounting in detail the years of sexual abuse that led them to fear for their lives. Leslie makes a surprising move after Judge Weisberg approves the prosecution's request to unseal the tape of the brothers' confession to Dr. Ozeal. After closing arguments are made, the jury is left to determine a verdict. Okay, I should tell you all up front that in our rundown doc, which we were both updating in real time, the star witnesses section, which we're about to get into, remained kind of blank for kind of a while.
It was a little sparse.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was a little little thin on the ground, but let's get into it. Star witnesses, the things that we liked about the episode. Tara, you have our lead topic. Would you like to begin?
I mean, as always, liked is not quite the right word for the show, given the subject matter. It's, you know, but I think one of the things this episode did effectively was describe the psychology of an abuser, specifically Jose, that he was very withholding of his love, except when he was molesting his sons, basically. And so he created a circumstance where they were craving his love and willing to do anything for it, even stuff they knew instinctively was not okay.
Yeah, I think they did do that well. But we don't agree as closely on the story of events leading to the murder. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because you thought it worked and I did not.
Yeah, I thought it built effective dread is how I put it in our notes, that it made the story made the murders, I mean, inevitable is the wrong word, but you understood the logic that would underlie an action like that, given that, you know, we see both of the boys telling the boys, both of the brothers telling the story of, you know, the abuse that they experienced and how they tried to tell people they trusted that it was happening and that it wasn't working and nothing was saving them. Eric has the line that was in the promo about, like, I've dreamed of rescue, but no one came to rescue me, or something to that effect. And so by the time we get to the night of the murder and they're saying their parents wouldn't let them leave the house and they were pretty sure that they were about to get murdered by their parents. Like, I bought it. I mean, I realize that there are questions around their motives and certainly the money is part of it, but I thought the way the show portrayed it, it worked for me.
Well, in our notes, we have a counterpoint. And my note is, story of events leading to the murder feel like a checklist and with no room for the idea that they're full of shit. But that is a little more black and white than I actually feel about it. I absolutely felt at the time that they were full of shit. I think that I and we as a society know better and more now about some of the psychology of PTSD and how it can range across many experiences and not just sort of a century old idea of shell shock and, you know, war veterans only, and that it also applies to survivors of abuse. So in that regard, I think the show did a good job in building that narrative from their point of view. I think my issue is more that there is no room in this narrative for the idea that they are full of shit and that it mostly the money, and that Jose was a dick, but was not doing things with the toothbrush and did not have code words for the abuse and all of this stuff that, again, I think now we know better that the faint absurdity of some of these reports is realistic. And at the time, we didn't really understand that, but I sort of absorbed this entire story at the time. And I'm more skeptical, I think, because of that.
Right. Well, the other thing that's sort of been in the background of this show since the beginning is also that the McMartin case had just ended or was ending at the time that the murders happened.
Yeah. Good
so there's
point.
Also like there's definitely a suggestion that like they've imbibed talking points of like stories that they heard that they could adapt to make themselves believable. Like that one Laura Linney episode of Law and Order Original where she's the Japanese, she had gone over to Japan to be a singer and then came back and shot the guy that was pimping her out. Essentially. It's a great episode, guys. Look it up. But
we don't rerun with that one that much, which is too bad. She's great in it.
She's so good. But they, you said, I think last week that you were more convinced of the abuse claims than you had been before, for example, that you didn't know about the photographs that were recovered that also come up in this episode of like the
Correct.
Boys naked without their heads.
That's true. And certainly we're not in a climate where like we're in a climate currently in history where I'm more inclined to believe any report as are, I hope we all. A lot of this is just sort of like, you know, having ingested this case when it was originally out and the outlandishness of some of the claims and how long they lied about it and so on and so forth that, you know, made one skeptical. And like, there's still like, I guess, plaque on my willingness to believe that needs to be chipped off. Terrible metaphor. Right. Sorry, it's late.
But it's definitely also true that the show has picked a side and it's on Lyle and Eric's side.
Yeah.
And Leslie's side.
I think, I think that is in my own notes that it's like, well, the show is first and foremost, I think, on Leslie's side.
Right.
And it has picked a side. I think my issue is not so much like I don't believe this. Like I am much more inclined to believe it. As you mentioned, based on stuff that was in last week's episode, it's like, well, I'm not sure this is the most effective way to approach the material. And it does feel a little checklisty to me. And there are other issues that we'll get into later.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. One of those issues is the continuing, you know, adoption storyline and the parallels therein, but the adoption goes through, spoiler, whatever. And Leslie is showing baby pictures around in the courtroom. It is a very cute baby.
The baby has arrived.
Yes, the baby has arrived. And then Jose's mom hands over a picture and she's like, well, this is my baby. This is my baby picture. Like, ooh.
Burr.
And then everyone is burned. And just for the right amount of time, I thought that was a good moment and one moment where the show was not like Jose is a, you know, unalloyed monster. So
I like that too. We also get to see Jude Law testifying some more because the Ozeal tapes get used in this case. They're despite the ruling of the California Supreme Court in the previous episode. So we get to see Ozeal watching Jude Law on the stand from home or in his office on TV. And I just enjoyed that he's talking back to her on TV because I do that to people on TV also. Not people I know, that's the difference. But Dave is always like, they can't hear you. I'm like, I'm talking to you through them.
No,
it's a very
here.
Human moment.
Yes, their appearance was all too brief, but I must also note that Ozeal's beige cliffs of Dover hair is getting, I feel, steeper in every episode. And I think by the end, he's just going to be, oh my God, who was that? Who was that cartoon character?
Johnny Bravo.
Yes. Thank you.
Hmm?
It was like Greg Brady. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. They also, they give Judalon, they really set her up for a sideburn, Judalon, when they're trying to discredit her on cross and saying, wasn't your whole aim that you wanted Oziel to marry you. And she says, incorrect. And they were like, did you want to have... Anyway, it gets to her saying she didn't want to have babies that look like Dr. Oziel.
No.
She's like, just gratuitously mean. But you know what? When you get served up an opening like that, you have to go through it. You have to.
Yeah, you do. Even if it's Knox Overstreet, I was like, yeah, she had to. Fair enough.
Yep.
And I also enjoyed, and like, maybe I'm a hypocrite for enjoying this, but at one point, Jill Lansing is just working at home at her kitchen table and her daughter picks up the phone and is like giggling at whoever's on the other end. She's like, Orange who? Aren't you glad I called? And it turns out it's Lyle, and he's like been telling her knock knock jokes, like, yeah, apparently for months, which was like, I guess a little much. And it doesn't seem like Lyle would necessarily be great with kids, but I just found that like it was a deftly done little touch that showed how braided into each other's lives all of these people are after years on this case. And I thought it was good.
Yep.
Better than usual.
A sweet touch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's about all we liked. And the list of aggravating factors is much longer, so let's get into it. I will begin. I think Gus Halper, who plays Eric, actually did quite a good job. He was having to disgorge a lot of expositional background that was not on a comfortable topic. But in the beginning, when he's on the stand and he's being asked to describe in detail what it was exactly that prompted this, you know, murderous reflex and made him afraid for his life, there is really a lot of Dawson's season 2 and 3 flappy blocking, and like he's flouncing around while sitting down somehow, and it's not good. He should have been directed better.
Yeah.
I also, there's some flashbacks of the kids trying to express what's going on to Kitty, and Kitty not being an ally to understand the case rather dramatically. Which is not the usual take, and that sort of goes back into my comments before that it's like, I think her role in all of this was maybe not so VC Andrews. But anyway, what they have the kids saying in the flashbacks is, quote, Mom, Dad's touching me and doing things down there. I mean, I don't have kids. I'm not a social worker. I don't know. That felt very, I mean, I don't know what choice they had in a flashback, but it just clank. Did you agree or were you okay with that?
Yeah, it's like when people tweet things that their unbelievably wise children supposedly said about current events, like that's come around so far to like people making fun of those tweets in even more flowery language. Like, your kid didn't say that. Fuck off. Clara Jeffrey of Mother Jones. But anyway, that was a little much. And also, I would just want to mention too that when they have the flashbacks of the brothers as kids, the wig that they put on the kid playing Eric so that we know it's him because he's the one with the curly hair, it's like a brown Little Orphan Annie wig that's like been run over by a car. It's so bad. I mean, I hate to make fun of a child.
My notes had a boot brush that was left out in the rain, but yeah, pretty much the same. Yeah. Also, smoking the shorthand for evil. I mean, smoking is evil. It's terrible. But this shorthand needs to take a rest. And if you're going to use it, have the actors know how to smoke and know how to put cigarettes out so that they're not still going in the background. And it gives me agita that I'm like, you're going to set the house on fire. Like, what if a Post-it falls in the ashtray? I can't.
Yeah. Also, every time one of the kids comes to tell her about her incestuous, abusive husband, she's smoking. Like in the spoof of this, every time they come back, she would have like four extra cigarettes. Like there would be cigarettes in her ears. Like they would just have to build on how much she smokes to indicate how little she cares about her children and, by extension, her own life, I guess.
Yeah. And also, she, I mean, I'm not sure if this is intentional or not, but she was literally always wearing a peignoir set, which only on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yep. At the end of the whole narration of the events leading up to the murder, we have Leslie smugly telling Jill at the end of it, and that's how murderers are made, which it may be in this case, but also like less often than not, would the world be a better place if every abused person killed their abuser? That's one that we can debate, but I don't think it's necessarily that momentous of a statement to make given the actual numbers.
Yeah, I also don't think that this is something that an attorney says to a fellow attorney.
No.
And doesn't get like fined in kangaroo court for being a drama queen. Like that's for the jury, mm-hmm. you know, amongst colleagues, leave it out.
Yep.
Yeah. I am interested to hear what you thought of Judge Mark Green calling Leslie aside and telling her to like calm down with the patting and stroking of her client. Mm-hmm. I think the show wants us to think that he's a big sexist meanie for bringing this up. And certainly Leslie has dialogue to that effect. And usually I would be on that side, I guess. But I'm kind of tired of the constant underlining that the show is doing about Leslie's maternal instinct and like the parallels between, quote, her boys and whatever's going on at home. So whatever I was supposed to think about Weisberg, I didn't. I was fine with that instruction. You?
Well, I've talked about this before, that I don't necessarily think that Leslie's tendencies in this regard are that sincere. To me, it's of a piece with the other stage managing that she's doing of them in court, like dressing them in the sweaters, which we talked about last week.
Right.
So, I mean, I mean, I'm sexist in the sense that a male lawyer probably wouldn't do it to a male client.
Sure.
Particularly not in this case. But I also just think like, you know, any lawyer is entitled to do whatever they want in this regard to like soften their clients in the jury's eye, even if it's kind of phony. So.
Oh, yeah. Same. But I mean, yeah. There's two issues with, I think you're right, but there's two issues with what you just said, the first being that I think the writing wants us to think that it is sincere and not phony.
Okay. Yeah.
And second of all, that this, I'm sure this probably happened. Like the other thing is that there, you know, there are a lot of things that really did happen that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. Some, they make sure to put a disclaimer that's like some characters were changed or composited, whatever. But I suspect that this happened and that they felt whatever reason that they should leave it in, but I think also that what actually happened in real life is much closer to what you're saying, which is that right. It was much more stage managed and perhaps cynical and with an eye to optics. So,
right. I mean, this is another debate that just came up today, right? The plea agreement that was made by George Papadopoulos, where, you know, then Sean Hannity, which I know Sean Hannity, but still goes on his show and is like, he didn't know what he was doing. He's just a kid. He's 29. And it was the same thing with Donald Trump Jr. Like, he doesn't know he's 38 or whatever he was when he was having the meeting with that lawyer last year. So whereas, you know, well, Tamar Rice was a thug because he was black. You know what I mean? Like there's obviously different standards, and Leslie is leaning into this one, like making them seem young and like they need her mothering, because that's one of the cards that she can play, you know?
Yeah, no. And I think that, you know, on the show and in real life, I totally respect that instinct. Do whatever you can ethically to represent your clients. I just wish the show would make her a little more would put it on that side of the line versus her actually over relating to Eric, which is the direction they're taking, which.
Yeah, it would be a million times more interesting to see a conversation between Leslie and Jill where they strategize about this. Like, well, I'll do this when the cameras are on and make sure that they get me versus like, let's go get our baby. I don't care.
Yeah. Or like, how pink is too pink for this sweater? Like, frankly, if it were just like Law and Order, True Crime, Leslie and Jill, I'd be way more into it, honestly. Like, just talk, like, just get everything in via exposition and tell us how you do this. It's processy. Yeah.
Yep. Agree. Mm-hmm. Just a brief note that the Eric part of Eric's story is that finding out that Lyle wore a hairpiece was one of the things that made him think that Lyle might be receptive to hearing him tell the truth about their still abusive father. Just that's a lot of freight to put on a toupee, but whatever works, I guess.
Yeah. And as usual, the toupee, once the toupee has been snatched off, that looks even faker than the toupee.
It's true.
We'll try to put in the show notes one of the Menendez TV movies closer to the time of the trials had a like truly fantastic wig snatch featuring, now I can't remember her name, Jill. Keep wanting to say Hennessy. No, she was on Dirty Sexy Money. Help me. We'll get back to it. It was Clayburg. Really. Yes. Thank you. Such a classic, so soapy. This was not that, which I appreciated, but then he looked like Sam the Eagle. It was frightening. I also have a tiny note. I don't know what it is about characters in the Law and Order verse. Like, keep a fork in your office for late night snacking because they're always using chopsticks. They're always eating Chinese. They're always using chopsticks. I just don't buy it. Like, keep a fork.
It's not practical.
In your office. No, it's not. It is not. But that's pretty minor compared to the scene we spent on. Would you like to meet your new son? Nah. I'm all set. Thanks. It's a very cute
sure
baby.
They do,
though.
And that's great. But do we have to see it? No.
No, I don't think we do. And I don't think we need to have the obligatory, like, let's discuss the case, but quietly because we're in the nursery. Like, you know, it's not a New York studio apartment. Just shut the door and go in the next room. You're fine.
Well, and the other thing is that husband, whatever his name is, don't care, Chris Bauer, comes in and is like, you've had the baby for a while. Let me take him. And she's like, no, not tonight. And it's the night that they've just finished the case. She's waiting for the jury, which obviously is still going to be a while, and what she says, but it's like, this is a baby. It's not an emotional support animal. Like, this is not really what the baby is for. He's not an accessory that you bought, you know.
Yeah, like,
it's
just
not a body pillow shaped
those,
like a man for you to not feel alone.
You know, get one of those pillows like Claire on 90210. It's like,
yes,
it's fine.
Exactly. And then the other, this is backing up before the baby scene happens, but Leslie, I guess, trying to be decorous in court, refers to Jose bending his children over to, quote, go all the way. Okay, we're talking about incestuous rape. Like, find another phrase, maybe, because gross.
Yeah, this is not a regional production of Grease. Just use the clinical terms and move on.
This is not that movie with Ben Affleck and his old chiclet teeth. Oh, God. Or pre-chiclet teeth, I guess.
Ugh. Oh, Batman. Yeah, and there's also praying in the scene where the baby is the emotional support animal. I didn't want to leave that out.
Pass.
Yeah, because she seems real observant, Leslie Abramson. Like, God forbid they not layer on everything to make her more likable when it is not necessary. Ugh, I don't know. All right, let's get into quickly the verdict. Would you like to begin, or shall I?
Well, I mean, we've already said there was less to like than dislike about this one. And we've got two more left, right? Seven,
yes.
Eight. Two more episodes. again, as I've said for like the past three, I've already committed this much. I'm going to see it to the end, but I'm not sure. I'm curious to see how much more show there is past the verdict, which is what's going to happen next week, I guess.
Yeah, but the first verdict. So I'm interested right. to see how it breaks out. Like, what are they going to do in the last episode? Is that going to be like after the second verdict and sort of like catch up with their lives? Like, they've each right. been married and divorced a couple times by now. This shit has been going on almost 30 years. So
yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure they had eight. Might've been seven.
Yeah, this could have been a nice tight British six. Like, come on, people. Just because they give you the space doesn't mean you have to take it all.
British six. You should go and trademark that while you're doing that. I will note that even though our list of aggravating factors, which was much longer than the star witnesses this time, I actually liked this episode a little better than last week's. I thought it was better paced. There weren't as many, you know, plant feet and deliver unrealistic oratorical lines moments. So I was okay with it.
And it was also almost all in the courtroom, which I think helps.
Yeah, I think that did help. But there wasn't enough Ozeal or Judalon. So maybe that's the last episode. It's like epilogue. Jerome and Judalon.
Judazeal.
Oh, Judazeal. Yeah, we got to make that a trending hashtag as well. I'll get on that. You trademark your thing. I'm going to read next time. On the Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, with Lyle and Eric's juries both struggling to reach a unanimous decision, the possibility of a mistrial leaves Leslie hopeful for the opportunity to work out a deal with the district attorney's office. Meanwhile, DA Gil Garcetti takes action to counteract the declining public perception of the justice system. That sounds like a real corker of a B-plot. And Judge Weisberg's performance in the trial comes under intense media scrutiny, given his record of hung juries and controversial verdicts, and the fact that he is an ER doctor in Chicago. You can admit the Blotter Presents to your social media circle at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. This has been the Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, and until next time, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.